Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the 257th episode of the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast.
Are you okay, Joe?
I'm fine. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Jay Cross.
Hello.
Mark Packham.
What's up?
And Matthew Knight.
Hello there.
Now, this is our first self-isolating podcast in a while. We've not all travelled to be together in wake of everything that's happening. And so we hope that you listeners are all self-isolating as well and looking after yourselves and staying safe. And we hope that we can entertain you with, more podcast stuff. It's actually, the one upside of all of this is
we don't have to see you.
You don't have to see me. Yes, that is true. But I was going to say also, we're only a couple of weeks away from the start of double the Guitar Nerds content. Because from the beginning of April, we will have a second episode of Guitar Nerds out every week. So you'll have the regular episode out on Wednesdays. And on Fridays, we are reintroducing popular series, the Friday Specials, which will be a series of interviews and conversations. So each week we're going to have someone new and cool from the industry. We previously did it with Just Effects Pedals, but we've got all sorts coming up. We've got Ben, the brains behind Jodo Guitars. We're doing some stuff with Thomas from Cream Tea Pickups, who worked out a way to actually virtually model existing pickups of famous players and create those pickups in like a perfect replica, which is pretty awesome. We've got Ben Adrian from Line 6 talking all about the Helix and his Cartographer amp, and also his incredible taste in guitars with his electrical guitar company guitar. So there is lots of extra podcast goodness just round the corner for you listeners. So don't worry. If you're self-isolating at home, you can self-isolate with us.
I sort of feel like we're going to get bored and end up doing something else as well. Like, if
what do you mean?
I just feel like, 2 weeks into this or whatever, we're just going to go, look, should we just do another podcast so we can just talk to each other?
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And record it and put it out. Like, I'm no promises or anything, because who knows where all of this is going. But like,
we should maybe do a Deep Space Nine watch through.
I mean, that would be so good.
Or a Battlestar watch through, something like that.
I've never seen any Battlestar. So
you've never seen Battlestar? Did you like DS9?
I love DS9. It's fantastic.
Battlestar's better.
Wow.
It actually is better.
This is a bold claim. But I'll be excited to check it out.
I'll be up for that. If we did like a watch through.
Are there many guitars?
Maybe not DS9, because it's like 180 episodes.
Mate, we could be in this for months. Never know.
I love Sisko. He's so cool.
That thong song, yeah, great.
yes, absolutely. Anyway, this is the part of the podcast where I tell you what we're going to be talking about. So this week there's not a lot of news, not a lot of new things coming out, surprisingly. Just a little bit of news. So again, like last week, we're going to endeavour to answer questions from the group, but we're also going to be talking about some exciting things, especially new things that me and Matt have got, which will be fun. And if you want to ask questions on future episodes, you can do so by joining The Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum, and join the discussion. And yes, we should introduce our new patrons for this week as well, because of course you can follow Guitar Nerds on Patreon at patreon.com/guitar nerds. So this week I'd like to welcome Daniel Etchells and Sid Finley. Thank you very much for both of you joining us on Patreon. How absolutely wonderful of you. And of course we do need to remind you listeners that there are still another 3 weeks ish. I can't really count. 3 weeks, I think, of the Thorpe Effects giveaway, because we are giving away a Thorpe Effects heavy water dual high headroom boost pedal, highly ranked by all of the nerds on 2019's Gear of the Year podcast series. It is an absolutely fantastic make gooder. So entry is open globally, and all you have to do is visit Guitar Nerds on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter. Find the entry post. There will be a new one every week, so you can enter on that if you like. And all you got to do is answer the question, what is one piece of merchandise available to purchase on the Thorpe Effects website? And to find the answer, you can visit thorpeeffects.com. We're going to be announcing the winner on the 8th of April, right here on the podcast, using the spinning wheel of nerdery. So you have until Monday the 6th, because we record a couple of days before. Oh, there we go.
What an intro.
What an intro. Absolutely. I'm on fire today.
There's a lot of stuff there.
There was a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff. But yes, let's crack into some things. So I can stop talking for a brief moment. Matt, let's go straight over to you. I don't know which one of your cool new things you want to talk about first.
Well, yeah. Well, this is the joy of working from home and being in front of eBay, I guess. not going out buying my daily coffee. I'm like, well, if I don't buy coffee for like 4 months every day, how much money can I potentially spend now? Yeah. You know, these are the kind of serious questions we have to ask ourselves. First of all, what should we talk about first? So we'll talk about the pedal board. The old Renash pedal board I got a couple of weeks ago. I've been building it step by step. I had a whole day in yesterday, sort of putting it together, really taking my time. Every time I do a new pedal board, I try and make it neater than the last one. I've kind of got everything powered up, a few things wired in, just got to get the rest of the pedals in there. And
I'm sure you mentioned it last week, but I can't remember right now. What finish did you have the Alder & Ash in? Because you've gone for the Tolex board, yeah, which is the new option from Alder & Ash.
Yeah, so he's doing, Rich, shout out to Rich at Alder & Ash, he's doing a bunch of new finishes. So people who might have seen them on Instagram before, does loads of exotic woods. These ones are sort of plain woods, but they are finished in Tolex, so a slightly cheaper option. And this is like a Voxy fawn colour, so the AC30 hand-wired.
Oh, like the hand-wired series. Oh, Jay, do you remember when you had that amp?
Yeah, I remember when I had that amp. It was wicked.
it was amazing. You're an idiot.
Yeah, well, you know, I was also like supremely broke, so it had to go. But yeah, no, it was wicked. Really, really good.
Yeah, so it's a mixture of that Tolex, and then I don't know, the other one's like a bluey one. It looks like a kind of fancy suit
jacket.
Like a suit jacket made what, of like a navy blue.
Like a letting agent.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. That and Vox. It's like a letting agent playing a Vox.
That makes sense.
And the shape of a pedal board, which I had specifically cut out for the ES8 and then my wild pedal. And it was so good to plug the wild pedal back in. The ridiculous Snarling Dogs mold spore. You know, great wah sound, but even better when you kick on the ring modulator at the same time. I mean, ridiculous, because you can have both on at the same time and then both controlled by the sweep of the giant foot-shaped tree door, so you can literally just wah and ring mod at the same time, which is fun, especially when you mix it with a bunch of delay. Pointless for a gig, but this is definitely not going anywhere. It's going to look very nice in my my corner of my room.
So speaking of pedalboards, did you actually get to use your mini pedalboard? Because you made a Metro 24 pedalboard up, which you posted on the Instagram and the group. You did that for a gigging or a practicing purpose.
So
did that see some use?
It did. I'm teaming up with someone I used to work with, and we are sort of just writing some songs and sort of both sort of jamming. Neither of us have played in a band for about like 5 or 6 years, so it was kind of all a bit rusty, but it was really fun. So in the end, I had a Thorpe Gunshot low gain. The whole thing was going into a Vox AC15 VR. do you remember those? They were they were solid state power amp, but a valve preamp.
Valve preamp, solid state. Power amp.
Surprisingly, didn't actually sound that bad. It was right, but yeah.
I don't remember them being terrible. I remember when they came out, because they were the first sort of cheap Vox that you could get, and I remember that everyone had one for a while.
Yeah, so it was quite a nice little studio, actually. Brixton Hill Studios.
Believe you didn't take your own amp. That's really weird.
Well, I just didn't want to carry a head and... because actually, this was the great thing. I could get the bus there 20 minutes to the rehearsal studio, and I managed to carry everything on me. This was like some sort of revelation. Screw the ungiggable rig. I'm going...
No, I'm not into
the most portable rig ever.
The extremely giggable rig.
I am not into this at all, Matt. A musician you are is directly... It directly correlates with how many trips to and from the vehicle you have to take to get your backline inside.
Which is fine if you're, you know, in your... big boy posh fancy pants van. It's not so easy when Matt's got to get the number 42 bus up Brixton Hill, is it?
You know,
yes, that's a good point.
Can you wait a minute? I've got to go back to my house.
Yeah, that would be it. It's a no mini pedals board.
What do you mean no mini pedals?
Well, you're allowed at least one mini pedal.
You're using the TC Electronic
That is true.
Tuner, aren't you? The Noir, what's it called? I always forget its name.
Polytune, the Polytune 3.
But you've got the Noir, haven't you? The black one.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, no difference to tone. It's just black.
I've got two of those. I don't know how. I think someone must have been someone else's at some point that they've left here. But they're good.
But the board had a Thorpe Gunshot, which I kind of left on most of the time, just sort of real low gain, sort of make gooder. Sort of what formed the basis of the Dane. I had the Red Mist from Redbid, but a lot of it was clean. So I was using a Boss PH1R phaser from the 80s, which I got.
I did think that was an odd choice of a phaser. I never.
It's really good. They're kind of really. I don't really know how to describe it. It sounds very different to most other phasers.
Does it? Because I would always, if I was going to add a phaser, you know, I'd have a phase 90 as the sort of, that's what I would think of. And if I wasn't adding that, I'd be looking for something that was an imitation of that or a modification of that in some way. I just never think of that Boss one.
Yeah, this one's a really old made in Japan one. And I don't know, it just sounds, it's a little bit brighter. It's sort of, you know, on the really low settings, sort of just leave it on a lot.
Yeah, that's what I like. Yeah, low settings and just leaving it on as a subtle sort of like a texture thing. What? How many stages?
I think it's four. So is it four? Maybe it's eight. I don't actually know. I'll have to double check.
I mean, four is where it's at, really.
So I was using that into a DM2 Waza, which I'm using the... I got this at Guitar Summit last year, Looperwerk dual expression. It's basically two expression pedal values on two knobs that you can switch between. So run that into the rate control, and then you can have like two preset tempos on a DM2.
That's great.
So you can go between a slow and a fast setting. Into the minim, which I've really been enjoying.
You've really fallen in love with that pedal.
Yeah.
Since you tried the Revo, you haven't, and then you got the minim, you haven't really stopped talking about it.
It definitely doesn't do subtle reverb sounds. Let's say the hall on its lowest setting is still like one of the biggest hall sounds that you would probably dial in. But what's great is using that little expression slider, you can have the reverse side on all the time, and then you can just dial in how much you want with the little slider or the expression pedal.
Fantastic.
With your foot. And then a plus pedal.
Yeah, which of course. The Game Changer Plus pedal.
I didn't use a lot. To be honest, it was just, yeah, we were sort of just finding our feet with the whole thing. But yeah, it was cool. So it's nice to actually like take a few pedals out and, you know, some different ones that I don't necessarily use all the time.
Yeah.
So that was cool.
Yeah, very cool. So I also like had a little band practice playing guitar on the weekend with my girlfriend. She's an incredibly talented musician who makes her own sort of solo synth music, but we've decided to do a sort of synth and guitar thing. So I'm using my ES-175, but I had to make myself a little pedal board. Now, I did have a little pedal board for this, but because I went and used that little pedal board for Polymath, I didn't have it anymore. And I was like, right, what am I going to do for this practice? Now I don't have this little board. I don't really want to build a big board, but there are some sounds I wanted. And I realized that basically everything I did was like, I have a transparent drive on all the time. I have a slapback delay on all the time, and I have a load of reverb. And I realized, oh, I can do all of those things because I don't actually, it's kind of a one sound thing. I was like, well, I can actually have all of those things just on the Katana. So I just used the Katana, and I just took the plus pedal just as a little bit of extra ambience every now and again. But I realized I can literally have every single sound I want straight off of the Katana. So I'm going to pick up, or I am picking up the foot switch for the Katana. And I've realized even with all the massive amount of pedals that are at my house, that essentially I can achieve, and I really think the sound quality of that thing is absolutely incredible. I felt no need to replace any of the tones I was getting with any outboard stuff. It was absolutely wonderful.
Awesome.
Yeah,
it's great.
Yeah,
amp.
Very cool. It is
it's
a great amp.
Best.
So yes, yeah, we obviously go on about it enough. Now, Matt, also you picked up a new pedal this week.
Yes, I did. After meeting him at Guitar Summit, I finally got the Dandrive pedal, the Dandrive Secret Weapon. So it's made me want to fall down the path of knowing everything about fuzz and transistors and all that sort of thing, because this thing is based on an old fuzz pedal called the Zonk Machine from the 60s, and it's just a kind of really nice, just amazingly versatile germanium transistor based fuzz. So obviously it's just really responsive to the volume control, but it goes like super heavy. You can dial it all the way back to incredibly light. And as I said, the guy only deals on Instagram, and he just has an email address, but his waiting list is just getting like bigger and bigger. He's really into like the circuitry of fuzz, and just like, you know, making sure that the components used, because obviously a lot of really good fuzz pedals use, you know, quite a low amount of components. I think in the old tone benders, it's something like 9 components, and that's it.
That's so cool.
So, you know, he's really all about making the best possible, most versatile circuit. So this is based on the old Zonk machine, which usually only had level and gain. He's added a bias control. So obviously bias control allows you to go like really like spitty, spluttery fuzz, almost like you're, you know, sagging all the power out of it. And then a mid switch, so you boost the mids, so you just cut through a little bit more. But what's really great with his pedals that no one else is doing is that all of his pedals are lacquered cloth finishes.
It's an unbelievable looking finish. Now, listener, I've put a couple of pictures up of Matt's pedal that Matt sent me, of both the outside, and you have to talk about the inside as well, Matt.
Yeah, so not only, obviously, he went all out for me and found some sort of crazy, it's not pink Tolex, it's like some pink cloth that he's finished that, but he also finishes the circuit boards in the same material.
Yep.
So he built a similar one for Pete Honore in like a comic book. So he managed to get an old comic book, then had it like printed onto a material. So it's like Thor on cloth. And then the circuit board is also part of the comic book. And then, yeah, he sold us all the components through that and then finished the whole thing in cloth. So it's amazingly well built.
The attention to detail
is
unbelievable.
Even, He's even put like heat shrink tubing round each little solder joint on like the foot switch and the jack pots. You can tell that he spent a long time like building each and, you know, every single one of them. And, you know, he's constantly sort of bringing out new circuits and tweaking it depending on what sort of transistors he can find and things like that as well. So I definitely feel it's like one of those pedals where you could find in like 20 years time, they've gone down like Klon territory where he's like, oh yeah, I've made this particular run and it had this particular NOS transistor in and now you can't buy them and everyone's going to go, oh my God, I've got one. They're going to be £1,000. So
that's a really interesting point, but I completely agree. Everything about these pedals has the makeup of becoming something.
Yeah,
legendary.
And you basically can't buy them anywhere. I think there's one store. I think you can get them from ATB Guitars in the UK.
Of course. Why not?
And they're all sold out. And then you can also get them from These Go to 11 in Sweden. There's also not a lot of demos on them online either. So you kind
of just...
There you
go, Matt. There's something to jump on.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe I'll try and put a couple of sound clips up. But yeah, definitely worth having a little bit of a read. There's a great website called guitarpedalx.com written by a guy I've got to know called Stefan. And he's done some pretty in-depth sort of analysis of all the circuit and stuff if you want to geek out over that, which I'm sure some people will. And because I've fallen down this kind of need to know everything about fuzz, I've bought the Pedal Crush book home from work. So I'm going to start reading a bit of that every day and getting a bit more nerdy if I can in my sort of free time. So yeah, that was the Dan Drive, the secret weapon.
Yeah, very, very cool indeed. Now, keeping before we come on to your next purchase and keeping along the line of pedals, we also received a lovely load of loan stock from Origin FX this week that Matt, you are very excited about. So one of the pedals that we received was the new Revival Trem, their bias tremolo, which I put a little bit of a me sort of working out how the pedal works video up on the Facebook group. But I'm going to be sending it to Matt so he can have a more in-depth look. Matt, this was actually a pedal that you were looking to purchase.
Yeah, I saw this at NAMM, and as always at NAMM, just don't bother trying anything most of the time because you just never really get a good feel for something, you know, because it's noisy and crowded. But this definitely caught my eye. I mean...
Mark and Jay, have you seen this, Mark and Jay?
Yeah, I've seen it. And actually, I was just thinking about you getting these and us not being able to try them is going to be like one of the consequences of this whole situation.
I would have brought them this week.
I listened to the video. That sounded really good. Oh, I can't wait to try it. When's that going to happen? No idea.
Maybe we need to set up some sort of like pedal exchange type thing where we just...
Well, I haven't even got an amp at the moment because Jay's borrowed my amp. So
what? He's taken your katana.
I've got nothing to play guitar through for the foreseeable future. So.
Oh my goodness. And now that you can't leave the house.
Jay, is that...
Mark, that is awful.
Is that
your
house?
Idea of hell.
It is. Don't worry. I'll arrange a care package.
Thanks. Please bring it round.
That and I don't know, what have I got a lot of excess of? Soy milk? Do you want some soy milk?
I'm all right. Okay. Right. I'm good.
But yeah, this thing, what I love, I mean, obviously Origin FX go all out when it comes to pedals and to circuitry and design. And at first I thought, oh, this is just a bias tremolo. Obviously everyone's going on about bias trem and harmonic tremolo at the moment. But what I didn't realise is this is... basically the entire tone stack, like, and preamp and tremolo from a
Fender. I think
they fell in love with a particular 62 Brown Deluxe tremolo that they've got in, or just Fender Deluxe they've got in their office, and it's great because you've got on and off, which is the circuit on and off, then you can turn the trem on and off
independently, so you can have that come on the master with the drive, or you can have it you can have it separately. You've got two options.
So you obviously you've got, and then you've got post-drive EQ, which is great because you can have two different EQ settings, or you can run it into a power amp. So you can use this as your preamp and then into a power amp if you want to use like an Orange Terra Stomp or something like that.
Fantastic to be able to voice it for the specific amp. Important to note as well, this is well, according to them, certainly the first ever, you know, faithfully recreated power tube bias tremolo in pedal form.
Yeah, I think they've worked really hard on that, on the actual like power amp settings, and I imagine a lot of that's been built with that revival drive that came out. I'd imagine quite a lot of
the very post drive EQ section that you're talking about is straight off of the revival drive.
Right, okay. Yeah, so they've obviously voiced it for that. I mean, the trem sounds absolutely amazing. You know, it is from what I've heard, it is just absolutely spot on. I think that power amp section really gives it a little bit of that, just a little bit more of a kind of realistic feel, if you kind of want to put it that way, you know, almost like you're playing through an amp. But one thing I love is the little foot switch input. If you're using an ES8, an ES5, or even a gig rig that's got a control out, you can then use that to remotely turn on the trem. So you can have this as your power amp on all the time, you know, and run it, you know, off stage or whatever. And then, yeah, you can remotely turn on the tremolo, or you can use a foot switch to do tap tempo, again, which is another really handy feature for, you know, for a lot of people using tremolo and want to kind of, you know, not just set like a slow amp style trem. They want to use it for a bunch of different things. Yeah.
Just to cut you back for a sec there, Matty. So it's a proper valve tremolo, but you can tap tempo it as well.
No, there's no valve. Okay. It's all solid state, but obviously what they in the revival drive is obviously it's, you know, they're replicating as close as possible with circuitry, the power amp setting and feel of this deluxe. And then you've got a trem, but you can have them on and off independently. So if you want, you can have just the power amp on or just the trem on. Right, Joe, or do you have to turn the power amp on to have the trem?
No, you can have them independently, you can have them both together.
Yeah.
So you could use it just as a tremolo pedal.
No.
You don't need to...
No, yeah. I don't think you can use just the tremolo.
Yeah, no, okay. that's what I meant. So I think
sorry. Yes, I see what you meant. You can have the drive and the trem, or you can have the drive and then a separate button for the trem.
Oh, okay, yeah, gotcha.
But that second button for the trem will only activate once the drive is on. Essentially, think of the drive as an on-off, and then there's an additional trem button if you want to use it.
Gotcha, okay.
Yeah, so but what's great is I've seen loads of demos of people literally using it as like a drive pedal.
You know? Oh, I mean, it goes crazy. Like the drive that I can't like describe the sort of the how chewy that drive gets when you push the gain. It does my favorite thing with drives, like a really vintage loose, like almost gets to a sort of like a Big Muff style sort of thing where everything gets kind of big fuzzy Les Paul-y sort of fat oscillating-y, I don't know how to describe the sound, but just like an amazing kind of vintage super drive tone. But at the same time, you can crank down that drive and then it's just an amazing make gooderer. You know, when I tried this, I was really like, this is obviously something I'm into, like this sort of a vintage style drive and tremolo. This is the sort of sound I enjoy. But also, there have been so many good ones. And how excited can I get about a tremolo and a drive, you know, when the price tag on this is over £300? And then I plugged it in and I was like, oh, yes, this is the best one by miles and miles. I love that it's the size of a brick as well. It's absolutely massive.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, they've got a real sort of look and feel about them compared to, you know, a lot of other brands out there, you know.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I cannot recommend it enough. Listener, I know it's a big spend at £360 or $430 US, or if you're in Australia, $655 US, or if you're in Europe, €481.
Surely not US dollars in Australia.
No, what did I say?
US dollars.
Did I say US dollars for Australia?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what they trade in. But it's an unbelievably worth the amount of money pedal. I couldn't believe how good this sounded as a drive and a tremolo. And the best thing about bias tremolo that I was finding when I was playing, because of the way the tremolo interacts through the power amp, you can it's not over the top of what you're playing. Like, it's not just a signal being cut, because it's a bias tremolo, because it's actually doing the job of taking signal away, taking, you know, the voltage away from the power stage. You can dig in and play over the top of it, as it were. Like, it's dynamic. So you play softly, and that tremolo is going to be very, very overpowering. And then you can dig in, and those notes, which will inevitably be your high end as you dig in more, will overshoot the tremolo. And it's just so organic. It's such an incredibly, dynamic is the word, but it's just such an amazingly dynamic pedal.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to trying it.
Yes, it is absolutely fantastic. Now, Matt, you've also fitted another thing.
God, it sounds like I'm just like old Uncle Moneybags, doesn't it?
Matt's getting his spending in while he can.
I'm literally never going to leave my house now. Stuart Robson reached out, and we've been discussing his company Sunbear Pickups, which we spoke about on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. He sent me the pickups, and I thought, in the spirit of mod mode, I would install them myself, and made an absolute hash of it. So I took them to a little repair shop on Denmark Street, of all places, called Stairway to Kevin's, because they're up four flights of stairs. And
I've been there.
It's run by a guy named Kevin, and they did an absolutely pro job on getting these pickups installed. So Stuart Robson sent me from Sunbear Pickups the 56.9 Duo Humbucker P90 set for my Nick Huber. And the reason I wanted new pickups for the Nick Huber is the guitar plays amazingly, set up absolutely perfectly. I mean, even the guys at the repair shop were like, you can tell this is like an absolutely just top of the line, like hand-built instrument. But I've just never liked the pickup sound. The bridge pickup to me was really hot. It was really overpowered. It was really mid-heavy. So it almost had this like slightly like cocked wah vibe to it. And sort of when I spoke to the guys at Nick Huber, they were like, well, the idea is that you're supposed to be able to really cut through a mix, and that sort of that midpoint is where you're going to cut through. And I went, I'm not sitting at a mix. I'm literally sitting at home.
I'm not sitting in a mix. I'm sitting at home.
So I said, look, I want something. I said to you, I want something that's much more like my 58. You know, my old Custom Chop 58 Les Paul. It's much more like a vintage PAF set. Now, obviously, everyone, when they make a humbucker, they're like, oh, it sounds just like a PAF. But not many people are ever going to, like, try an old one. So I think, you know, Stuart's, you know, really, like, hit the nail on the head from what I understand a PAF pickup should be like, and then built that into both a P90 and a humbucker. We didn't do anything crazy. You know, it's the same set that you can buy on his website, sunbearpickups.com. So you've got an 8.4K bridge pickup and a 7.4K soap bar pickup in the neck. And yeah, it's just a kind of almost classic P90
sound. Did he relic them as well?
Yeah, so they're mid to heavy age as well. So that's one of the other options that you can have. I didn't want any coil splits or anything like that. So they come in a really nice single core braided, like vintage wire as well. He was also kind enough to send me a couple of like Mojo Tone pots, these like low friction pots. So now the tone control is like super responsive, volume control is super responsive. But the thing is, a lot of people say that their vintage PAF tone is like a really fat telly. It's not like, you know, what you would assume a humbucker is, especially when you consider like modern, you know, Gibson Les Pauls. It's a really nice, warm, fat guitar sound without being totally overpowering. And the pickups are quite low powered. And as soon as I plugged it in, it was like, yes, this is the sound of this guitar. You know, especially the guitar is quite lightweight. It's a cedar wood with a maple top and a mahogany neck, rosewood fingerboard. So it's a mixture
of
woods.
That is a
woods.
Real mixture.
Yeah, so this kind of brings out all of the kind of natural tone of the guitar, and it just, they just sound great. Instantly, like, plugged it in, was like, this is a vintage guitar, but with absolute, like, modern, hand-built, like, appointments. Like, you know, things like the neck carve and everything like that. So, I mean, Sunbear Pickups, obviously a very new company. He's building pickups now, I think, exclusively for Iverson guitars, which is something we spoke about after
the
show.
See, I keep saying Iverson. Is it Iverson?
I assumed it was Iverson, but it might be Iverson.
No, Iverson definitely sounds right. I think I've been messing this up.
I mean, the basketball player was Iverson.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you've got to remember that I say ethereal.
Yeah, I mean, you say a lot of things, Joe. As we were talking about in our group chat earlier, like, you've got an English degree. You should know about all this stuff. You should know about words and that.
He's the last person I'd go to for any advice on words.
Words and that. I wonder lonely as a Branton.
Guitar Nerds is brought to you in association with Faith Guitars. Based right here in the UK, Faith Guitars are designed by British guitar luthier Patrick James Eggle, who has been hand-building guitars for decades for some of the biggest names in the business. Founded in 2002, Faith Guitars have been voted the UK's best acoustic guitars 5 times in a row by both the public and panels of music industry experts, so you can be confident in your new Faith guitar. Like all quality acoustics, Faith guitars are made of all solid tone wood, so you can be sure they'll start off sounding great and improve year on year. Faith don't use laminated woods, but you'll be pleased to know that despite the all solid tone woods, the superb specification and handmade construction, Faith guitars are still affordable, with prices starting at around £450 or $600. Discover the range at faithguitars.com and then visit one of the many UK or European retailers to try them for yourself. But hold up! If you're in the USA or Canada, you can buy direct at faithguitarsusa.com, and by using the coupon code NERDS at the checkout, you can get an exclusive 10% discount. So, in the UK and Europe, check out the guitars at your local dealer or faithguitars.com. But for North American listeners, buy direct at faithguitarsusa.com and use the coupon code NERDS for a special 10% off at the checkout. That's USA coupon code NERDS at the checkout. Faith Guitars, award-winning acoustics designed right here in the UK.
So yeah, that's Sunbear Pickups. He makes a bunch of different ones, a bunch of different humbuckers and different finishes. Yeah, he's got 59.
Sorry, I've got to stop you there. I should have gone with I Wander Lonely as a Clown. I can't believe I did that.
Yeah,
that would have been much better.
That would have been better.
Oh
yeah.
My God, what's
I'm
wrong
sorry,
with me?
Jay.
Can you just
I'll edit it
in,
out.
Joe?
Yeah, I'll edit it out.
Yeah,
go on, say it again now.
I Wander Lonely as a Clown. Thanks, mate. Thanks. I appreciate it.
No worries. So Sunbear Pickups. Also, the presentation on those on
those
incredible.
Oh yeah, we said before. Great box, well packaged, nice stickers, handwritten notes on both the bottom of the pickups themselves and in the box. Yeah, just, you know, it's not just like I wind pickups, here you go. It's like, you know, it's all about the presentation and everything as well. And I mean, yeah, range of different things. Humbuckers, P90 single coils for both Tellys and Strats, Firebird, mini pickups, and even what he calls Beartrons, which are his kind of TV Jones-esque pickups as well. So a whole different range of different things in a load of different finishes.
Matt, is he doing...
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Watch out for.
Does he do any Mustang pickups?
I'm sure he would.
I'm thinking about. I've been thinking about maybe changing the pickups.
You
in my
love
Mustang.
That Mustang. That is really an accidental guitar for you that has become your absolute favorite.
I do love that. I do love the Mustang. I do, but I don't actually plug it in all that much. I just pick it up and play it acoustically. Just because it's nice, it's fun, it's easy, and you know, I live in a small flat and making a lot of noise is difficult. But yeah, when I do plug it in, I think this is a real cultural shift for me, but just I think I'm moving away from like harsh bridge pickups, which was always what I was into. I think it's because I was
old
into,
age.
Well, I don't actually think it's that. I think it's more a case of like, because I was into harsh bridge pickups for so long, I've lost all the top end in my hearing, and so like they just don't sound as good anymore.
So, neck, I mean, you know, is that for granddad?
Well, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's that mixed with, you know, working in a guitar shop for 10 years or whatever, and also like standing next to a loud drummer playing, you know, loud cymbals. It's just, it just doesn't sound as good to me anymore, and I just want something a little bit more metal. Yeah, I don't know. I'm decided what I'm going
to do yet. According to his website, he will, if you want something that isn't shown on his website, he will discuss it with you for your sonic desires.
Well, that perfectly actually, go on then, Matt.
I was going to say one thing I did see today, which yesterday actually, which was very interesting. I saw a thing with a guy playing a Novo, and I didn't realize that some of the pickups they put in the Novos are humbuckers with no pole pieces visible on the casing. And apparently that was the original prototype design for PAF. And then they decided at the last minute to add in the pole pieces. But yeah, apparently the original ones were just a plain flat pickup covering, I guess the same as mini humbuckers or, like the Firebird ones, I guess.
I wonder what that would do to the tone. Be really interesting to try
one
of those out.
The guitarist in my band, Tim, plays, he has P90s made for him in humbucker housings. He has them made in just like a plain chrome, tree tone pickups.
So no pole pieces.
No pole pieces.
Weird.
Just looks like a no pole piece humbucker, but it's a P90.
He really, really wants to look like he's playing EMGs.
I don't think he knows what those are. But no. Yeah. So Matt's point about Sunbear doing whatever you want brings me nicely onto my story about Sunbear, because I approached Stuart from Sunbear Pickups this week, because this week I bought an Epiphone EB1.
No one knows what that is, Joe.
Yes. No. I know what it is. I absolutely don't care.
Right, sure.
Because I bet it sounds horrible. I bet it sounds like...
Which will bring me on to the second part of this story. So first off, the Epiphone EB1. So the EB1, originally known simply as the Gibson Electric Bass, was introduced in the late 50s. Mid to late 50s to, I can't remember the exact year, basically, to compete with the Fender Precision Bass. It was Gibson's first ever bass. Now, it was a violin shape, so, you know, predating when Hofner were doing this, but it was a solid body. No valves in this one.
Weird.
And it had a painted on F-hole. It had banjo tuners originally running through the back of the headstock, not the side, and very much it was Gibson, and this was the start of like the 30.5 inch scale length, certainly for Gibson. This was very much Gibson saying, we want to make a bass, but we want to ignore everything that Fender are doing and make it our own way, and they very much did. So the coolest thing about the original EB1 or electric bass, as it was first known, it was reissued in the 70s and called the EB1, because by that point they'd introduced the EB2, which was the 335 style bass, and then the EB1, which was an SG bass with a neck pickup, and the EB3, which was an SG bass with a neck pickup and a bridge pickup. But of course there's a little bit of crossover, because there is also an EB1 which is a Les Paul Junior with just a neck pickup. But
That's regardless. Just a rehashing of the name, though, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, basically. So this was the EB and then later referred to as the EB1. It was the first electric bass for Gibson. Now, the great thing about this violin bass is the strap button on the lower bow of the bass, you could unscrew and replace with the kickstand that was supplied with the instrument,
yes.
allowing you to play it like a double bass. And that, J. Cross, is the reason that they went for just this massive humbucker in the neck position, because unlike Fender, who were essentially creating a new sound, and of course the Fender Precision Bass is the most important bass of all time, and it recreated an instrument, and it has completely defined where bass sits in a mix and what bass is in a modern band. But at the time, in the 50s, double bass is what people played, and a Fender Precision Bass was a far, far cry from that. This Gibson essentially went, well, let's make something that bass players actually want. You know, that was kind of their thinking. So that was the EB1. Now, you can get EB1s for about £6,000. If you can find one, they're incredibly rare because they were produced for such a short amount of time. And I would love to get one, but you know, it's
not
too
on the
much.
Not on the guitar nerd's wage.
No, exactly. So fortunately, Epiphone reissued the EB1 for a real brief period, about 2 years, and it came out of Korea. They made it in their Korean factory, so it was incredible quality, a solid state violin bass
solid
with a
state.
Painted God damn it. I'm sticking with it now. I've got to stick with it. A solid state a solid body bolt-on neck violin bass with a painted on F hole and just the humbucker in the neck position. 32 inch scale on the reissue for some reason.
Oh, that's weird. I wonder if it's because they decided that people wouldn't be using it as a double bass anymore, and so I don't know.
I think it was probably to bring it in line with Hofner's, which were 32 okay. inch scale, because it looks so similar to a Hofner, but of course originally it was a 30.5. But just, you know, I guess they thought, well, people who buy this are probably going to be Hofner players, and those people play 32 inch scales. But the good thing is you can kind of fit 34 inch scale strings on a 32 inch, which means that you can buy heavier gauge strings, because you can't get heavy gauge strings on short scales without paying lots of money for a custom set of strings. So perfect for me. It means I get to spend less money on strings. It means I get that cool bass. Unfortunately, the kickstand was lost with this one, but it was very, very affordable. And
it still came with the kickstand. That's interesting.
Yeah, they reissued it with the kickstand, but unfortunately, yeah, this one didn't have it. But not to worry. Imagine trying to do that these days. Like,
that'd be so good.
The most hipster thing you've ever seen.
The next Polymath gig, you're just there with a kickstand with basically like a really small bodied electric double bass.
Mate, yeah, I absolutely know that this time next week when we do this podcast, you'll be like, right guys, so
I've been
doing some thinking. I've been in touch with Hercules and they're gonna make me a kickstand for it.
yeah exactly. But anyway, so I got this bass and it's wonderful. I was actually incredibly disappointed with the seller. It was virtually unplayable. Both the volume and the tone pots didn't really work properly. I've had to do loads of work on it since I got it. It was a really unacceptable way to sell an instrument. I'm not going to say who the seller was, but you know, a really unacceptable way to sell an instrument. But you know, fortunately, I can fix all these things, so it wasn't the end of the world. So I've got it into playing condition, and I'm like, it is wonderful. But of course, I'm moving from jazz basses to this bass, so you can't pick two more different instruments. So I went to Stuart from Sunbear Pickups, and I told him this. So I was like, look, I'm moving from jazz basses, which obviously that bridge pickup, especially. And their single coils, they're very articulate. They interact really well with the harmonics, especially with drives. You get a lot of those harmonics coming through, and you don't have that when you're on a big muddy humbucker designed to sound like a double bass on the neck, and you don't have any other pickup. I was like, do you think there's anything that can be done, or do I just have to cut a hole in it and fit a bridge pickup as well? Because a lot of people did used to do that with the old with the old EBs. They used to they ended up fitting their own bridge pickups. And so currently, Stuart from Sunbear is embarking on a first, an experiment into seeing if I had to take all these pictures of the innards of the pickup, and he's going to see if he can make something that will obviously go in the neck position, but is voiced specifically to give me a lot of mid and treble focus.
Weird, because you would think that the position is the key to making that sound like what it sounds like. So,
which is what I thought. I went to Stuart and said, look, I don't know if this is possible because I think obviously a neck pickup is going to mean I can't access these sort of tones. And Stuart's been like, well, let's see. Let's see what we can do.
Yeah.
So
you, I guess if you can manipulate the sound internally to a degree, then it should be. I don't know.
But it's just more about where it sits on the string, you know, being closer to the bridge, you know, gives it a brighter tone. Being right in that neck position, you think it's going to be quite dark sounding. But I'd be amazed to hear what's possible.
Absolutely. I think almost more than anything else, it's a case of getting a lot of that loose bass cut, because you get so much flobby sort of coming through on those, and that is those pickups. That's not even the position. Yeah, that's just the nature of those massive humbuckers that they put in that position. So if that can be revoiced, I'm really excited to see what he does, because I would love to play this Epiphone EB1. It's such a ridiculous bass with the worst neck dive of any instrument in the history of the world. I mean, the headstock is about the same size as the body.
I remember them. So they were, I think they were either still out or they were just discontinued. Do you know what year your one is, Joe?
I don't know, and I haven't checked a serial number yet.
Okay, I think they were either discontinued or they were about to be discontinued when I started working in music shops. And
really, I thought they were like late 90s, these ones. Yeah, they might have survived into the early 2000s.
They were one of the ones that I always remember seeing in the Epiphone catalogue. Like when I used to go into music shops before I worked in them.
Yeah, this is where I was first introduced to them as well. Like terrible catalogues with awful pictures of women holding guitars. You know, it was that sort of a catalogue.
What's wrong with that?
No. But you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. Yes, of course. Yes. I remember it being in, you know, next to like the Epiphone Flame Cat and stuff like that. Like weird models from the
Flame Cat.
Yeah, from the late 90s. And I'm pretty sure they were still around at the beginning of the 2000s, but not for very long. You know, it just kind of went down to the Viola bass that they did, and that was it really for that.
Still current, the Viola bass.
Really? Well, there we go. Yeah.
That one. And I actually still think a really legitimate modern alternative to the Hofner bass, because they've actually dealt with the bridge issue. And the tuners. So the Epiphone Viola bass is actually, if you want a violin bass but you play in a band that require things to be in tune, then the Epiphone Viola bass is a wonderful solution to that.
Then you bought the wrong instrument.
I love that about Hofners. I love it how sometimes they're just, you know, most of the time they're spot on, but, you know, a lot of the time there's kind of intonation stuff, and it's kind of most prevalent, I guess, on the Beatles stuff. And you hear Macca just like hit a
take
note.
A drink.
You hear Macca hit a note a little bit too hard and the pitch just wobbles a little bit. That's what gives it the character. I love it. Hofner basses are so good.
I borrowed a Hofner bass for a practice for Polymath a few years ago, and I think I got, fortunately I brought something else along with me. I must have got, I don't know, a couple of minutes into a track before our guitarist stopped me and was like, this sounds awful, can you change to the other bass?
Yeah, but that's because your playing style is so heavy.
I know. Trying to be...
It's all about
in
your
like,
clubby hands. That's the problem.
Trying to be in like a heavy band where I play heavy with loads of drive, but actually the things I love are all the old, old harmonies.
This is the problem, isn't it? It's nothing really to do with Hofner. It's the fact that, you know, you can't play your style with basses that have, you know, like a floating bridge on there, because you just, you know... You kind of pull it out of tune. That is just what it is. They're not made for the style of music that you play.
Yeah, exactly. God damn it. Anyway, we were actually, do you know, we're nearly at the end of this podcast. We haven't even got on to we haven't even gotten to the news. So let's do some news. First up, Mark Packham.
Hello.
Mark Packham. Let's talk about something that's not actually a new release.
No, but it is news because I hadn't even seen this until today, although it looks like it looked like it was announced on Friday. Yeah, the 13th, Friday. Strymon are discontinuing the OB1, their first ever pedal.
Is this their first ever discontinuing as well?
I think so, yeah. Just in their statement, they say OB1 compressor and clean boost, first effects pedal we ever released under the Strymon banner way back in July 2009. It's been the catalogue for 11 years. The reason they are discontinuing it is because they can't get a consistent supply of the light-dependent resistors that they use for the optical part of the OB1. And so they basically just can't manufacture them at the volume that they need to. So they've knocked it on the head. And they don't have any left. Some dealers, it seems, still have them. But yeah, OB1, the first ever Strymon, is donezo.
Wow, that is that's crazy. I can't believe Strymon are now a company that's been around long enough to discontinue something.
Well, I mean, that's basically that. What got to me actually, 2009 seems like such a long time ago, you know.
Yeah,
think
about the amount of stuff.
Well, think how the pedal market's changed since 2009. That's the biggest thing is, you know, there wasn't even Strymon. Strymon just started. And, you know, now think how many people have followed their lead and are doing boutique, expensive pedals.
They changed the world of effects.
Definitely. Yeah.
But also, you know, they've kept that same housing. They haven't needed to change that. That worked from day one. And, be interested to see if anything comes out. Again, anything similar comes out, you know, whether they, I can't imagine they'd release a big box compressor, but interested to see if they do another one.
Have they got anything else in the line that does compression? Matty, you probably know this.
No, I mean, I just had their website up a second ago because I wondered what was in their current line, because I think there's quite a few Strymon pedals we don't talk about. We talked about a lot when we first started doing the podcast because they were the boutique pedal, and then obviously so much has come along since then. But yeah, to just give a quick run round, I mean, there is, so you've got the Volante, the Iridium, obviously new, Sunset, Riverside, Magneto, that's their Eurorack tape loop, the Big Sky, the Timeline, the Mobius, the Deco, the Dig. Definitely don't talk about the Dig enough. That's a very, very cool pedal. El
that's
Capistan,
because it's like
Flint.
It's going for that. We don't talk about the Digs. It's going for that kind of 80s sound, which I think,
apart
from you, Matty, I don't think anyone else here is.
It's the bloody best. Blue Sky, the Lex, which is their rotary. The Brigadier, which is based on the sort of Bucket Brigade analog delays. The Ola, which is their chorus. The Orbit, which is their flanger. And then the OB1, which is their optical compressor. And
not anymore.
You didn't say the Deco.
I did.
Oh, did you?
Didn't I?
Yeah, I think you did.
I thought I did.
The Brigadier. I don't think I've ever plugged in a Brigadier.
I like their tagline is, literally just clicked off it. Destroy the analog digital divide. It's basically, as far as I was aware, it's just taking on the sort of classic Bucket Brigade. Sort of analog delays.
It isn't a Bucket Brigade.
No, it's digital.
It's digital.
They describe it as the debucket delay, as in digital bucket delay.
Gotcha. Not douche bucket.
Debucket. Oof.
Yeah, but actually, I think the thing is with that one, for me, the El Capistan is just, it's just an absolute machine. That thing is so
Which one's
good.
The El Capistan?
It's the one that isn't the Space Echo that Matt can't say.
Yeah, it's the tape delay, basically. Yeah. Based on, so you've got the Brigadier, which is going off to the
so
bucket.
Good.
yeah, Brigadier, which is going after the Bucket Brigade. You've got the El Capistan, which is the tape. The Dig, which is the kind of 80s, quite clean sort of digital delay. And then, I guess, the Deco. And then we know about the timeline and up from there.
Yeah. Guys, I think I want a new, like, Space Echo style thing.
RE20, mate.
Yeah, have you heard about the RE20?
Well, I own an RE20.
I'm also going to jump in and say, have you heard the RE20? It's really good.
No, but I own an RE20.
What are you worried about then?
Well, about a year ago, I showed it to my keyboard player, and it's been on his pedal board ever since.
You know, yeah.
I don't want to pay for the same pedal twice, but I do want a similar thing.
What about the Polytune Noir that you got there? Pay for that twice?
I think someone just left it here.
I think you just took one.
Almost certainly.
RE20. I must say, because I think friend of the podcast, Dan Grace, has El Capistan, right? Doesn't he have one on his pedal board?
Not when I play with him. He just doesn't bring any pedals now. He just plugs straight into the amp.
We had a band practice last week, actually, me and Danny G, and I think he has swapped out his El Cap for maybe it was still on there. He's also definitely got an old DM2.
Who does Dan prefer playing with, Jay? Is it you
definitely
or Mark?
Definitely right. Me.
We've not had a band practice for 6 months, but then
there you go. I mean, ours was within the last couple of weeks.
Exactly.
So,
we also don't need it though, because I just write the tunes and then we just rehearse them, and then the album's done. So
yeah, see, we jam a Kono,
Yeah, I can't do the jamming. Forget about that nightmare. Who wants to jam when you could just have the song done already? Pointless.
Who wants to jam when you can spam?
You were the least likely human ever least to likeable. Be a musician.
I write the theme tune and then I sing the theme tune. Simple as that.
Okay. We haven't done any questions.
No,
on
we said
podcast,
we were definitely going to do some questions as well. Why don't we just make next week all questions? Because
we keep saying that we're going to do that.
Yeah,
we
but
never
not,
do.
There's not going to be any news next week, is there?
Yeah, maybe.
So,
okay, maybe.
Because of the vibe that's going on at the moment. So why don't we commit to a question special next week, and then people can
send
in...
Should we do at least one question?
Nah, let's save them for next week. There's some good ones, and I think if we commit to a question special, that will be a good way to do them.
Okay. Let's do that. So we are drawing to the end of this week's free episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. You can, of course, listen to an entire extra episode of Guitar Nerds every week over on our Patreon site, patreon.com/guitarnerds. You can also find it in the description of this podcast episode. This week, the Patreon episode, we're going to be continuing our Gear of the Decade series. Each week, we're going to be tossing up the best bits from 2010 through to 2019. And then we're going to be deciding upon the best guitar products of the entire decade. Now, to listen to that and become a Patreon supporter, it costs only $1 a month, and you can enjoy the podcast ad-free and early. Well, actually, to listen to that, you have to pay the $5 tier, and you enjoy the extra episode plus access to the entire back catalogue of mini-series like Question Hole and Bar Chords and the Friday specials. And at the $10 tier, you can become an executive producer and enjoy all of these benefits, plus the prestigious honour of having your name featured in our podcast outro song. You can follow us on all the major platforms, social platforms, that is, not like Bridges, with @guitarnerds, and you can join us on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/guitarnerdsforum.
Are you okay, Joe?
I'm fine.
Have you been, thanks. We're day one into self-isolation and you've already been...
It's already gone mad.
Yeah, this is terrible. Honestly, pubs not being around is actually going to be the end of me. Anyway, thanks very much for tuning in. We'll be back next week with more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Bye-bye.
Cheers,
gang.
Yes, well... Schultze, Michael Hall, Brian Hansen, Jeffrey Wax, Eric Hammer, Mario Turan, Brian Einsler, Gavin van der Linden, and Jacob McGee. Pi, Mark Hizao, Kadawaki, Stuart Robson, Newton, Rob Barstow, Christian Lambert. Adam, Keith Adams, Eric Fallon, and Andrew Good, Naren Peters, Richard Sudworth, Jacob Warren, Jamie Kemp. And guitar nerds. Ernie Cooper, Ross Edwards, Nate Nagel, Stephen Buck, Aaron Sherman and Rob Grant. Oh, Dave Lee and Emery, James Baker, Martin Griff, Matt Bellamy, Jake Gray and Blake Wyland, Scott Kennedy, Christopher Losith, Hans Ams, Derek Rich, Rob Nordwick, Steve Merkel, Jenny Short, Robin Smith, Carlos Mancha, Brad Page, Andy McKenzie, Scott O'Brien, Paul Corrigan, Will Clare, and don't you forget it, the one man who has been our patron for the longest, Mook Rabbit. The guitar nerds. The guitar nerds. The guitar nerds.
Yeah.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.